back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is a it's Pittsburgh week around here, but it's also the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Getting back out on the road. Brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some Raven scratch-offs to give away on Friday. We're going to be at Fadley's at Lexington Market, joined by my pal Dan Rodericks, right off the backside of his sold-out performances over at Hopkins with an unbelievable Baltimore show you would have loved, Luke Jones. Baltimore, you have no idea. So Dan will be with us on Friday. It's all brought to you by our friends at Goodwill. We help feed some less fortunate folks during the holidays. We hope that you're warming people up and opening up your heart to do some good things out there. Our friends at Goodwill were a part of that. And our friends at Window Nation keeping us warm inside. 866-90-NATION is the way to go. I'm wearing my Drug City gear here, my 1954 brand new shirt. We have a new sponsor here at Drug City. Please go support them. Buy your booze down there and your drugs and your booze down at Dundalk. Drug City, the fountain. And we're going to be doing some crab cake tours down there as well in the future. And we're going to be back in Dundalk next Thursday, the 15th. We're going to be at Costas in Dundalk with Gina Shock from the Go-Go's and a whole bunch of rock and roll stuff and Hammerjack stuff. It's going to be a great day. So Thursday the 15th, if you're doing nothing, come on over to Costas and have a crab cake with us and say hello. Luke Jones joins us now in the aftermath of, I don't know that it feels like a victory. They're 8-4. They won 10-9. The backup quarterback won. I mean, a lot of good news in the aftermath of the final. At least John Harbaugh wanted us to believe that, and no tough questions in the post game. I mean, how dare you, Luke Jones, come up with those narrative questions that they hate so much, being that we tell stories around here. So John Harbaugh can start his own narrative however we want. We'll control the narrative around here. Part of the narrative, Luke, in the aftermath of the victory was things that almost happened that could have, should have, would have happened. James Prochet throwing a National Football League pass. I don't know much, but I'm thinking he won't be throwing any more NFL passes.
My blood pressure has finally returned to normal after watching that. Nestor, you know I'm a very quiet individual in the press box. I'm the type that, you know, I'm looking up stats, I'm watching the game, on my laptop, tweeting, whatever. I was incensed watching that. I really was. I couldn't believe that in that situation, it's 9-3. There is, 12 and a half minutes to go in the game. You're already in field goal range. 2nd and 7 from the Denver 29. That's as close as you get. You know, Justin Tucker from that range is as close as it gets to automatic among kickers.
The score's 9-6 in your mind.
Right, exactly. Right? That's in your pocket at that point. And yes, you want to get a touchdown. I'm not saying you concede and you just settle for a field goal there. I get it. They had struggled to move the football. I get it. They were trying to do something to catch the Broncos off guard. And, well, you let a wide receiver who doesn't play a whole lot, has made minimal contributions, who is clearly in a position where he's trying to establish himself in the NFL, whether it's with the Ravens or whether it ends up being with another team. I mean, this is a guy who's in his third year, 6th-round pick. He has not done very much in the NFL. How you call that play to a wide receiver is one thing. You know, I mean, I remember back in the day, Antoine Randuel throwing passes for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it worked. It worked quite often for them, if you can recall. I could understand it if it was a receiver who, you know, thrown some passes in the league or someone who's been in the league a little bit longer. For example, if you have DeMarcus Robinson run that play, he's seen a lot of NFL football, right? He's seen a lot of opposing defenses. But to call that play and for it to be executed in that way and for that play design to clearly have not fooled the Denver Broncos in the slightest. And, oh, yeah, you target a running back in the end zone, a deep ball to a running back. I can't believe what I saw in those moments. And you know me, Nestor, I am not a fire the coach guy. I have not been a fire the coach guy about Greg Roman as much as I have questioned the status quo in the big picture and whether we're at a point even before Sunday, even before that play or the injury to Lamar or whatever is going to happen the rest of the year. I was questioning, you know, are we reaching a point where, you know, whether Greg Roman goes off to Stanford or not, that it's time to make a change because this has kind of run its course and it's not growing in the way that you'd like it to. That play call and that result, that was a fireable offense on Sunday. So if anyone is relieved that the Ravens were able to put together a touchdown drive to win that game, has to be Greg Roman. And I'm not saying that John Harbaugh would have fired him, but that was some galaxy brain stuff right there, Nestor. I mean, for that play call to be called in that moment, knowing you already had a field goal in your pocket, and I get it. People will say, well, James Prochet can't throw it in the quadruple coverage. Well, James Prochet is not a quarterback. Greg Roman is an offensive coordinator, and that play call in that moment and seeing how poorly that was executed showed me that that was an offensive coordinator reaching and someone who had no answers at that point in time. So, you know, I don't want to belabor it too much. They did win, and you know, they're going to continue to move on. And I'm not saying that they will or should fire Greg Roman right at this moment, but boy, if we're talking about the Ravens making a change at the end of the year and Greg Roman, you know, whether he goes to Stanford or whether the Ravens just decide to pull a Wink Martindale with Roman, we're going to look back at that play and kind of feel that don't want to say beginning of the end necessarily, but boy, that's going to be kind of a marquee play that you're going to remember as far as I still can't believe they called that play and ran that play in that spot in that kind of a defensive struggle and to have that kind of result. I mean, it's mind numbing. Even talking about it a couple days later, it's just, just crazy to think about it. And no one's going to convince me that that was an acceptable play call whatsoever.
What should they be doing with Tyler Hunt? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what he literally is like a Lamar spy, right? Like that's what you would want. He, obviously, the way he runs the football, his legs won the game, right? Like his ability to get out of the pocket and make one play to do changed the game, like down at the goal line. Like they were beaten several times. I don't know what they're supposed to be running, but if he's the quarterback, they shouldn't have somebody else on the field throwing the football.
Well, I mean, I think it's tough because, as we mentioned in our previous segment, you know, the same offensive questions and issues that have plagued the Ravens with Lamar Jackson at quarterback don't disappear when Tyler Huntley's out there. The wide receivers are still lacking relative to what you see elsewhere in terms of, you know, high caliber playoff type teams. The offensive line, I mean, Ronnie Stanley didn't play. Patrick McCary was on and off the field. So you're down to your third string left tackle. And look, I like Daniel Faalele, but he was drafted to be a right tackle and he was drafted as a developmental right tackle. So when he's playing left tackle for you in a game like that against a Broncos defense that, as we mentioned, is still very good despite the ineptitude of their offensive operation. So
I call it a turnstile. That's what I called it.
I mean, it comes down to this, whether it's Lamar or Tyler Huntley, you know, in the coming games, the coming weeks, they've got to get the running game back on track, you know, and I don't just mean Lamar running or Huntley running, as you alluded to. You know, you look at their schemed up running game since the bye week, you know, it's kind of gone in the opposite direction. It felt like it was really getting going. You know, when you look at what they did in the second half in Tampa and what they did against New Orleans, and you kind of look at, you know, I even go back to the Cleveland game, which wasn't overly efficient, but you know, it was getting the job done. It was serving its purpose in the way that we think of how this Ravens offense likes to operate. So they've got to find that. And, you know, how much of that will help if, you know, J.K. Dobbins is back and his range of motion's better and the scar tissue that was cleared out with the scope. You know, great, you know, if he looks more like that. But we also know that that's not a guarantee. And we've seen with Gus Edwards after a couple promising games before the hamstring issue that, you know, he doesn't look quite right. But, you know, they got to block better. They need to run better. I mean, the running game, we know it. And that's speaking as the guy who bangs the table over and over. They need to throw the ball better. They need to throw the ball better, which is still true, by the way. But it's a Greg Roman offense. This offense is designed around the running game. And that's something that they need to have be more effective for them, which it wasn't particularly effective other than, as you mentioned, Tyler Huntley in some, you know, some key moments. I mean, the passing, you look at it, he was 27 of 32, but for 187 yards, 5.8 yards per attempt. We saw this late last year, Tyler Huntley, and this is where I will say he does differ from Lamar Jackson. We haven't seen him show the same willingness to push the ball down the field. Now, how much of that could be less experience? I think that's valid. How much of that could be a little more of a conservative game plan relatively speaking, with the pass compared to when Lamar is back there.
Yeah, until you give Prochet the ball and let him throw it.
Well, yeah, right, exactly. That's what I keep coming back to. That I mean, it's just mine. As I said, that
I
was
get
a
that you don't want
brain.
Tyler Huntley to make the fatal flaw and throw the interception that cost you the game. So you're trying to dink and dunk, and in a 6-point game or a 3-point game at one point, right?
Yeah.
Like all you're trying to do is give Justin Tucker a chance to kick the ball, and then you piss that away.
Yeah.
And they still won. That's not the narrative, as Coach Harbaugh would say. That's going to be my new word for him, by the way, if you haven't noticed or not. Narrative. That's his word, not mine. What does he want the narrative to be? That they won by a point and their backup quarterback's a hero?
Yeah, and that it's hard to win in the National Football League, which, look, there are elements of that I'll buy, but to sit here and try to
Garrett
act
Downing
like –
write that. I mean, they got a Ravens website over there. They can write that.
I mean, it comes down to this. And look, you can only play the opponent that is presented to you that week, right? Whoever's coming to town or wherever, whatever city you're traveling to. But to sit here and try to talk about this being a big win on the same day that the Cincinnati Bengals beat the Kansas City Chiefs again, I mean – come on, I know John Harbaugh doesn't care about the Bengals beating the Chiefs in the moment, but when you look at the eyeball test, when you look at where teams are trending and you look at the overall state of the team, and oh, by the way, the Bengals, they didn't have Ja'Marr Chase for the last several weeks, and they were able to endure that, and you saw what they were able to do, and now he's back, and that helps them.
And that's trouble.
Yeah, they have DJ Reader on the defensive line, and so they've had their share of injuries, so I get it. And let's be very clear. No head coach worth his salt is going to go on the post-game press conference and publicly dress down his team for what they didn't do particularly well when they win a football game, because that's a perfect way to lose your locker room. But John, behind closed doors and exhaling and getting back to his office early Monday morning, he knows what happened on Sunday, and he knows the reality of where they are right now with not knowing when Lamar is going to be back, or maybe they do know when he's going to be back, or not knowing how healthy he's going to be, how effective he's going to be. He knows that that's way more relevant to their season than beating the Denver Broncos 10-9.
What's that the left pinky issue, right? I mean, we're talking about his wheel, right?
Well, and this is where it's different, Nestor. If this is a PCL injury to a 30-year-old Peyton Manning, even a 25-year-old Tom Brady, a pocket passer, right? You say, okay, that's not ideal. You want to be able to move in the pocket, but it doesn't fundamentally change your offense, right? If Lamar Jackson, whether he's out there or not, and I guess it doesn't change too much with Tyler Huntley, but it certainly changes things if you have a lesser version of Lamar, and it's a case where you can't say, you're going into the game saying he can't carry the ball 12 times. That changes fundamentally your running game. And certainly if you're in a position where you have to throw the ball more, that changes things as far as, the defense recognizing, hey, Lamar's not leaving the pocket. That changes how
and he can't move in the pocket him. And he can't push off the way he needs to push off to throw a ball 38
right,
yards.
Right. And let's be clear, as I mentioned in a previous comment when we were talking about this, if they're not going to send Lamar out there if he's 60%, right? We're talking about a case of, okay, they're in a position where they don't feel like he can damage a knee anymore. He's moving around well enough. I don't know
what
that number
would be. That's not going to be Sunday morning, by the way. It's just not.
And I'm not suggesting it is. I'm talking, this might be 2 weeks from now. Heck, this could be the rest of the season. It might be something where he can play with it, but he's not going to be 100%. I saw, can't remember if it was Mike Florio or one of the national types made mention, Zeke Elliott had a PCL injury for Dallas last year. Now, he didn't even miss a game, but you look at the splits of how he performed before that injury and how he performed after, it was striking. And look, it's a running back. Zeke Elliott's carried the ball way, a ton. So I don't want to make – it's not a direct comparison. The point is, as I say all the time, healthy enough to play is not the same as healthy enough to thrive. And if you have a Lamar Jackson whose mobility is not thriving in the way that we've come to expect, boy, that changes everything, because, it's a different version of Lamar you're talking about there. It's not really Lamar then, right? I mean, again, Tom Brady can play on a bad wheel or Peyton Manning could play on a bad wheel, or go down the list of any number of quarterbacks. I'm not saying Lamar can't play, but that is such a fundamental part of what he does that it completely changes his game. So, again, we don't know.
And by
so
the
much
way, let me interject this, because hold your thought. But this is why, when you're talking about giving a running quarterback $250 million, and we're now in the third straight year of Lamar having health-related issues after October, because when you run into linebackers 14 times last week and Joe Burrow didn't, and the other quarterbacks, go through any of these guys, Allen, any of the guys that are upright, Joe Burrow looked like it's September 1st and he's ready to kick your ass on Sunday. He looked healthy. He looked right. He looked fearless. He looked all that you want to see an NFL quarterback look, pissed off from last year from losing the Super Bowl, like all of that, right? You think about where December is and what December football has looked like here for 26 years, right? And you say, you're going to run into linebackers in September. You're going to run into safeties and linemen in October, and you're going to be upright in December. This is why they don't have running quarterbacks. And I'll continue to go back to that night you and I sat in Canton, Ohio, and they put Ray Lewis in the Hall of Fame, and he was running into linebackers. And you and I were up in that rickety little press box up there going, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Like, we've never seen a quarterback do that. This is why. Because he ran the ball 14 times, and then he gets hurt, and we might not hear of him again. And if we do, I am very, very skeptical, having watched him go up and down those steps and having had a knee surgery myself and knowing what the wheel is worth just to walk, to think that if they give him 3 weeks off, 2 weeks off, he doesn't play the next couple of weeks, maybe get him back against Atlanta or something like that, that you could get a 100% the version of him that you want going into Kansas City, Buffalo, Miami, whatever it's going to be. They had their own problems. So did Nashville over the weekend. But I keep going back to what would 100% of him look like, and what are the odds that you're going to have 100% of him in any December, let alone when he's 27, 8, 9, 30, down the line the next 3 to 5 years. What you want him to be in fantasy land, and how wonderful it is that he's this talented, incredible, transcendent kind of quarterback, he's that on September 1st when he's healthy. He's not that after the 180th time he's run into a linebacker in the course of 10 weeks, 12 weeks.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with you in terms of, that wasn't a cumulative. He got hurt in the pocket. He got hurt in the pocket as a passer. So I don't think it's not the volume nearly as much as just his mobility is a big part of what makes Lamar Lamar, right? Whether he's running 12 times in any given game, or if it is one of those occasions where he only runs a few times. And we've seen games like that as well, but he got hurt in the pocket. The point is, when you're talking about any quarterback who his legs are a big part of his value, and that's anyone would admit that with Lamar. I mean, we're talking about the guy who already, in my mind, is the greatest rushing quarterback in NFL history. That's not a knock on his passing. That's a compliment to how transcendent he truly is. But this is where we come back to it. And for me, it's not even, how many runs is too many? You're going to get hurt. You mentioned Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow tore his ACL 2 years ago. He got hurt. Joe Flacco got hurt in the pocket. Tom Brady got hurt in the pocket. Quarterbacks get hurt, just like any other position on the field. However, when you are breaking down a player's value, and now you're talking about, and I wouldn't say 3 years. I mean, Lamar had COVID 2 years ago. I mean, that wasn't, that wasn't an injury per se. Lots of guys had COVID 2 years ago that were missing games. And
I just remember
well.
Being up in Philadelphia when no one was there and thinking he looked like a shell of himself and thinking like he didn't look like he wanted to run that week. Like 2 weeks ago, okay. It looked like he didn't want to run. He didn't want contact in a couple of these games. 2-3 weeks ago, he didn't want – you can see the difference when he's out there and he's in command and he has the full complement of his skill set. Right? He does not have that right now. He hasn't had that in a couple of weeks. And this is the third season in a row that the wheels have been taken away from him, even ever so slightly, to just whatever that would be, that his wheels aren't 100%. When that happens, to your point, he's a different quarterback than when the wheels aren't right for a pocket passer.
Well, and I think this is where you do look at it, and there has to be some frustration that this is now 2 years in a row. And I'm, the week to week, banged up here and there. I mean, again, the numbers bear out that, you know, he wasn't that limited at, you know, at, for too many stretches of time the last few years. But when you're talking about having missed the last four games last year with the bone bruise in the ankle, and now you're talking about this knee injury, however long he's going to miss, whether it's a game, whether it's two games, or whether it's longer than that, you know, it is where you look at this thing and say, you have to be pragmatic about it and say, you know, the lower body injuries are starting to, you know, pile up a little bit here. It doesn't mean this is going to be debilitating to him long-term, but 25 is different than being age 27 and age 29 and age 31. And, you know, that's where the Ravens have always had to consider this. It doesn't, and that's not even me saying they shouldn't pay him or shouldn't extend him, but it is part of the conversation. And that's why for me, it's always been more about, you know, just how is he going to age? People always kind of talk about, well, what happens if he suffers a really serious injury? Well, anyone can suffer a really serious injury. I mean, Patrick Queen was thinking he broke his femur at first on Sunday. Now, x-ray was negative. It's a thigh bruise with Justin Madubuike landing on him, which I think anyone's going to be feeling bad when Justin Madubuike's landing on him. But, you know, the point is, anyone who takes the field, takes a football field, knows that there's a potential for very serious injury, you know, ranging from, you know, broken legs and, you know, torn up knees and Achilles to head and neck injuries, which are much more consequential to the quality of someone's life even. So you always take that risk, but there was always that question. For me, it was always Lamar falls somewhere on the scale between, you know, take your pick as far as Derrick Henry or, you know, any running back who carries the ball a ton. Lamar falls somewhere on the scale between that, which Lamar is not that. He doesn't carry the ball that much, compared to the most prototypical passing, you know, pocket quarterback, Dan Marino, Tom Brady, whoever you want to name. Where does Lamar fall on that scale? And the question for me was always, as he gets older, it's going to have to trend more and more towards the pocket side. I mean, that's just human nature. You slow down as you get older, right? I mean, that's true of anyone. So that's where the Ravens have always had to kind of look at this thing and kind of try to project out how Lamar is going to age. And that's why for me, to not see this team take more steps to become better throwing the football, and that includes personnel, as I'll continue to complain about their lack of wide receivers. But that's all part of this equation, though, as far as talking about a 25-year-old Lamar Jackson or a 22-year-old who was a historic unanimous NFL MVP compared to what he's going to look like 2 years from now, 4 years from now, 6 or 7 years from now. And look, that's not to say Lamar still won't be a great quarterback into his 30s, but what has to happen in order for that to come to fruition? The health piece is going to be, you know, that's huge for anyone, right? You know, quarterbacks that have had bum shoulders and elbows, you know, saw their careers end very quickly. So, you know, that's true of anyone. But when you're talking about how unique his skill set is in terms of how important his legs are to the overall picture of who he is as a quarterback and who the Ravens are as an offense, yeah, how can you not look at that and have some concern, not just for the rest of the season, but looking at that in the big picture, because, you know, he needs to stay on the field, right? I mean, availability is important. He'd be the first to tell you that, and how frustrated he was at the end of last year. So, you know, again, you hope this is a minor injury, and I'm not expecting him to play this coming week, that's for sure, but you hope it's a minimal absence and Tyler Huntley can hold down the fort, and you hope when he gets back out there, Lamar's right. But to your point, how likely is that for him to not just get back out there, which I expect that, but how effective, you know, how explosive, is he going to look like himself? Can he look like himself at least enough to keep the opponents, you know, on their heels a little bit, you know, knowing what he can do to an opposing defense? Or is it going to be a diminished version, which is just going to be another problem that you can kind of tack on to some of the other concerns we've talked about with this offense here since the early weeks of the 2022 season?
That's just your narrative, Luke Jones. I mean, you got your narrative, Baltimore Luke. You can find Luke out on the interwebs. He'll be in Owings Mills all week long, probably agitating John Harbaugh during Pittsburgh week. We're getting ready for the Pittsburgh Steelers here this week, and also getting ready for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll be letting ourselves play on Friday at Fadley's. Then next Thursday, the 15th, we're in Dundalk at Costas. Not at Trug City where I have my cool shirt, but we'll be at Costas with Gina Shock and a whole bunch of rock and rollers. So celebrating my 31st anniversary on Baltimore Radio, which happens on December the 13th, much to the chagrin of Kenny Albert, because he gets a year older every year as well. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.